Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you today, Chris Perlongo, who's the Associate Director at the University of Vermont. Chris, it's so awesome having you today. How are you?
John, I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. It's April in admissions, so we're busy, but at the same time, I know we're doing really well. So I'm glad to be here.
Fantastic. Welcome again. And so give us a brief introduction about yourself, Chris. How long have you been in admissions and how did you end up in such a position?
Yeah, sure thing. Happy to do so. Again, for folks here, my name is Chris Perlongo. I'm the Associate Director of Admissions at the University of Vermont up in Burlington, Vermont. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a proud first generation of college student originally from Queens and Long Island, New York. It's good to be back and good to talk to my folks here. At the same time, I'm entering my 23rd year in higher education. So I've held roles in Division I athletics as a housing director and as a first-year seminar college instructor. But most of my career has been in admissions, spending time at Wagner College in Staten Island, American University in Washington, D.C., New York University, Fordham University, Champlain College in Burlington, now the last 5 years at University of Vermont. I'm a proud graduate of Quinnipiac University, where I got my bachelor's degree in English and communications, did my master's degree in secondary ed at Wagner College while coaching the men's lacrosse team, and I got my second master's degree in higher education at NYU. I'm currently beginning my doctoral work this fall at UVM studying leadership and policy studies.
Well, good luck with the doctorate, and wow, you have a lot of experience, 23 years in admissions. Obviously, the University of Vermont is so lucky to have you, as are we on this podcast. So, Chris, what can you tell us in terms of what sets the University of Vermont apart from other institutions, and what aspects of the university do you believe make it attractive to so many prospective students?
Yeah, sure thing. And I tell students, again, having worked with thousands of students over the world during that time, that there are 4,000 different colleges, universities in the United States. So keep in mind, when you talk to schools, you're going to hear a lot of overlapping answers to this question. You'll hear about world-class faculty, incredible facilities, beautiful campus. These responses will be synonymous with just about every school you engage with. UVM has all those too. Burlington, Vermont, again, I've been here 10 years. It's an incredible place. It draws faculty and staff who could live and teach anywhere in the world, yet they choose to be part of the community here of about 10,000 students at UVM. Despite being the fifth oldest institution in New England, next to Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth, and Brown, we've been around since 1791, we've kept the campus aesthetic that holds true to proud tradition, yet keeps cutting-edge technology and a great quality of life for our students. Now, keep in mind, this occurs both in the academic setting at our seven different schools and colleges, as well as a social setting with over 275 clubs and organizations, with everything from Division I sports to one of, if not the biggest, ski and snowboard communities on the East Coast. And many schools have a beautiful campus. You're going to hear that a lot. I will say ours is second to none. As one who traded the New York City skyline for the Burlington skyline, we are set in the Champlain Valley, set between the Adirondack Mountains that are the backdrop for some of the most incredible lakeview sunsets in the world. And Burlington's a great place. It's a small but eclectic city. We got a great arts and music culture up here, coupled with a tech and business startup industry, which has really taken off and is really good for our students here too. And we're all just steps away from Lake Champlain. It has endless recreation during all seasons. If you like to ski and that's your piece, great. I'm a New York City native. There were no mountains where I grew up, so I love being outside in the summertime. It's about the lake. It's about the hiking trails, the running paths. But again, you have that great setting here in Burlington. And it's all walking distance from campus. So all that being said, what you're going to see for every school and what I tell students is what separates these institutions is their community. It's their people. Right? And UVM's is founded on the common ground values of respect, integrity, innovation, justice, openness, and responsibility. It sets the principal foundation for our community of 10,000 students coming from 48 different states and over 44 different countries and 100,000 alumni throughout the world. So as you're visiting your schools, check out the buildings, check out the campus, hear all the things, but at the same time, talk to the people that are there. That's what's going to make the campus pop.
Well, it's definitely about the community and the people that are there. And you mentioned that you have a student population of around 10,000. D1 sports, skiing, of course, that Burlington skyline, not to mention that you're right near Lake Champlain, which is awesome. And you offer so many different programs, just to name a few. You have all kinds of engineering, biology, chemistry, and psychology. So, Chris, what could you tell us about the different ways to apply to the University of Vermont? And is there a benefit in applying one way over the other in terms of being accepted, but also those scholarship opportunities?
Sure thing, John. Again, if I'm nothing if not transparent and honest, then I like to give students information that's going to be applicable to a lot of this process. But again, you should check with each individual school and college, because even though we all have a lot of similarities, we are also a little bit different too. So always check in with your admissions representative, their website, or that school or college. But at UVM, we have both the Common application and the Coalition application available to students. And the Common app is accepted by about 1,500 different universities throughout the country. It's not universal, but a lot of schools will accept it. And what it does is allow students to apply to multiple colleges using one application. No surprise there that the far majority of students that apply to UVM will use the Common application. And we have no preference, however. Whether it's the Common app or Coalition, we'll take either one, whichever one works for you. Now, since I've started at UVM in fall 2019, we've seen our application pool grow from about 18,000 applications to almost 30,000 applications. Oh. The last few years, COVID impacted that. The Common app and UVM has become more popular for a variety of reasons. Our environmental programs, our sustainability, our location. Basketball teams made the tournament the last couple of years. All of these things go into the visibility for UVM. So for us, though, we do now receive about as many applications for early action and early decision as we did the entire applicant pool only a few years ago. So the long way of saying is applying early definitely makes a difference. Now, the question is by how much? And talk to your schools and colleges, because these outcomes will vary. At UVM, we offer early decision. It's a binding agreement. Essentially, we're telling a school, if you get an early decision, if they admit you, you're coming to that institution. You're going to withdraw the rest of your applications to your other schools, and you're coming to UVM. You think that matters to admissions counselor? Of course it does, right? You're basically committing to us, sight unseen. You're telling us exactly where you want to be. And naturally, our admission rate is higher. At UVM, it's about 10 points higher than the traditional admission rate of about 60-ish percent overall. So yes, we do factor that in. You know, however, with early decision, there is a caveat. It's the financial side of things, right? Because you are applying to a school, early decision, usually sometime in November, and you'll find out in December if you got in or not. And if you were awarded admission, you want to make sure that you have your financial cards in order. Do your homework, right? Make sure that, again, you know what you're committing to, not just for your personal side of things, but the fiscal side of things. Now, how to do that? First tool is a net price calculator. Every university in the country is required to have one on their site. And we'll be honest, some are easier to find than others, to be quite frank. Mm-hmm. I find that the easier the price calculator is to find, the more accurate it tends to be. But that's a broad general statement. That said, use it. Give it a look. It'll give you an estimate. It's not what you're going to pay for school, but at least it gives you a ballpark of what to expect. Other terminology in this process, speak to schools that offer scholarship or meet full need. That essentially means is you'll get scholarship and they'll close the gap, whatever's left. Some schools will do that. Some schools will not. So I would say, you know, students, the application process is a lot. Parents, guardians, if you want to wrap your arms around something, the financial aid process is a great place to get involved in. It's incredibly complex, especially as we sit here in 2024 with the FAFSA and the new process that's happening right now. There's a lot going on. So I can't stress this enough. With the financial commitment to a college, it should be part of your decision process, because you have a big impact on not just your time while you're in school, but post-graduation when it comes to debt, what you're incurring. You want to have those conversations now. Now, of course, you know, a lot of students can't commit to a school early decision. Only about 500 of our 28,000 applicants come to UVM as early decision. So I'd say for not just UVM, but most selective institutions, early action is your best option. Again, you'll get your application in early. Our deadline's in November, and you'll find out in December, just like early decision. But the difference is it's non-binding. You'll have until May 1 to make that call. So you're still evidencing your interest in that institution, but you're not making a binding commitment. We admit about 60% of our applicants every year. So if you apply to us early action, you'll know by mid-December. And to put numbers behind that, about 2/3 of our 30,000 applications apply early action. So I'd strongly recommend considering it. Of course, there is regular decision, but honestly, barring a good reason, you want to consider early decision, if not early action, just because regular, the deadline's usually in January and you're not going to hear it till March. It doesn't give you a lot of time to make that call.
Well, we appreciate that overview. You touched upon so many great pieces of advice there. Number one, the financial side of things. I'm glad that you mentioned the net price calculator. As Chris said, usually it's an easy Google search or easily found on the school's website, but you definitely want to do it, particularly if you're going to be applying early decision, which is binding. Now, I also appreciate the fact that you talked about really the best way to demonstrate your interest in a school is in fact to apply early decision, because you're saying, hey, if you accept me, I'm coming. So speaking about demonstrating your interest, Chris, is that something that you guys track as part of your overall application process at all?
No, it's a great lead in, John. I appreciate that. Now we're going to talk about the application process and what we get into. And the term you're going to hear in this review is holistic review. We encompass all different things, right? Including demonstrated interest. And that's a variable question. Some schools will, some schools won't. Honestly, in my take, I think it never hurts, to be quite honest. You know, whenever you reach out to a school, and be clear, there's a few ways of categorizing your demonstrated interest. You know, that could be a campus visit. That could be an email to a counselor. That could be a phone call. That could be some type of tactile way that you're reaching out to that institution, letting them know you're not just one of other 28,000 applications who I've heard of Vermont, might be a cool place. I heard the skiing's good, but beyond that, that's it. So I highly recommend at least reaching out. And again, some institutions will tell you we don't factor it at all. It's never a bad thing, and not to get too nitty-gritty in the technology, there's always a way to track how much students are reaching out, if they're opening emails, if they're responding to us. So I say do so, definitely.
Yeah, and it's also important to do so just as part of your own research students. So whether or not a college or university indicates that they track it, it's really good for you to do it, so you're able to help determine whether a school is the right fit for you or not. So I know you touched upon it a little bit already, but could you walk us through the general process of how applications are reviewed at the University of Vermont, including the key factors you consider when evaluating applicants?
Definitely will do. I will say one last thing on demonstrated interest.
Sure.
There is such a good thing of doing that, but also don't overplay your hand is my biggest thing. And again, this all comes from experience. I've been in this a long time. I have some students who over demonstrate their interest, and emailing a common one is, when do I reach out to a counselor? Right. And I think a good thing is after a visit, when you submit your application, if you catch an information session online, virtual counts too. All good things. A quick email saying, hey, I heard about University of Vermont, saw the session. That's a great time to reach out. Just don't do it every week. And that's not a made-up example. That is very true. I had a student from a school that child made nameless reach out to me once a week, and he was a good kid, but he did not need to do that. That was too much. So once in a while is okay, but again, just don't overdo it. So
to go back to
it's very true. It's, again, sometimes, and I don't blame them, students hear a lot of facts, but basically every once in a while is okay. And of course, questions are always fair game. You can always reach out with questions. That's what we're here for.
Well, that's great. And I'm sure, of course, you want questions that are not easily found on your website, right? Like, what's your mid 50%, right? Like something that's easily found. So maybe they just, as you said, when there's something new, you did a virtual event, you did a visit, you want to let the admissions rep know what your thoughts were. Would you agree with that, Chris?
100%. Yeah, it's one of those things where I never want to discourage somebody reaching out. And again, in my work, I work with students who, you know, have a ton of privilege and access and all the different resources for college process. And again, I was a first generation of college student. I went to a huge public high school. My graduating senior class was 1,400 seniors. You know, we didn't have that access. My parents didn't go to college. So I never want to dissuade you from asking a question. But don't ask a question just for the sake of asking a question. That's probably the main point there. And you can tell when a student's, like John said, something that's easily found on the front page of a website. If you ask me my deadline, you could find that pretty easily on our website. So again, I'm not saying not to, but to your point, John, yes.
No, I appreciate you sharing that. And so many students and their parents want to hear about that application review. So what can you share with us, Chris, in terms of how you review those applications?
Definitely. Okay. So yeah, the biggest thing is you're going to hear from just about every school, including all the ones I've been affiliated with, is the term holistic review. And what that basically means is we look at everything, okay? And that's true. And that includes transcript, testing, recommendation letters, essay, interviews if applicable, demonstrated interest if applicable, portfolios. There's a lot of different things that you can look at for holistic review. Again, check with your schools, because there's not one blueprint for every single college, except for one point, the transcript. You know, I think that's the most important piece of the puzzle, just because if you think about it, it's 3.5 years of your schoolwork, right? All the schoolwork you're doing at whatever high school you attend throughout the country, institutions go on to know how you've done in the academic setting. Most will look at ninth grade, some don't, but assume it's going to be ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, and yes, senior year too. Most places, even if you apply early action, early decision, we're still going to want to see that senior year worth of coursework. Also, don't get too hung up on just a GPA. A lot of schools, and UVM's guilty of it too, we put a nice big number up there on a 4.0 scale and students get intimidated by it. I will promise you, I do not have a perfect record. Not every student who gets admitted to UVM has a perfect record. In fact, far from it. So the thing is, look at the GPA, use it for context, but at the same time, it's the strength of the curriculum too, right? And if you didn't have that perfect record, what does your record look like? Are you a steady trend of A's and B's grades, or do you have something called an upward trend where ninth grade, and this is quite common, transitioning from middle school to high school can be a lot for some students. So if they stumble out of the gate, you have time to pick up your grades, again, called the upward trend. A downward trend, as you can probably assume, is you start off real strong and maybe sink a bit come sophomore, junior year. You still got senior year to pick that up. So again, try to get that balance. The idea of junior and senior year being more important, I think is fair. This is the last full year that we'll see and usually has the strongest curriculum overall, right? And I think that's something really important to focus in on, because challenge yourself, but don't overwhelm yourself. There's a balance there, right? Especially in the core courses. And when I say core, you're looking at English, math, science, social science, and foreign language. Have you taken those core courses all 4 years in high school? And at what level? Is it college prep? Is it honors? Is it AP? IB if it's offered? Dual enrollment? The common question we get in admissions is it better to get an A in the honors class or a B in the AP class? And the corny admissions humor I give is better to get an A in the AP class, right? And that is true, unless it's dragging you down the whole way. And I tell students, you know, C, D, F grades in AP courses do not help you. It doesn't matter how challenging your curriculum is. If you're getting straight A's in courses that are kind of fluffy and you could do more in, that doesn't help you either. So you want to find your balance there overall for sure.
Well, that's great advice in terms of finding that balance. I also appreciate how you talked about the holistic review, which of course means that you're looking at everything. You talked about that transcript, right? That is extremely important, probably the most important part of the overall application, because that's where you get to determine, based on what the student did in high school, whether or not they could handle the work on your campus. You also mentioned essays. I was just curious, as a follow-up, is there an essay that you could remember that really stood out that you could share with us as an example, just to give students a little bit of insight in terms of what they should be thinking about when sitting down, getting ready to write those essays?
Yeah, sure. You know, you look at different pieces of the application, and we might be able to circle back on, you know, the transcripts, the recommendation letters, testing we'll talk about too a little bit, engagement and activities, because all this stuff does matter for sure. As does the essay. You know, students say, do you guys really read it? Does it make a difference? We do. And I say this not just as a former English teacher, but, you know, we talk a lot about admitting students on our campus. If it was easy as just SAT plus GPA, you're in or you're out, I probably wouldn't be employed. At this point, AI could do that, right? We want humans. We want people to come to our campus and get involved in all the things, do the activities, bring different identities to campus, and frankly, different viewpoints, right? If I had a college campus that everybody was the same, they all spoke the same language, they all agreed on the same points, they all had the same beliefs, same interests, it would get boring really fast. So my advice on the essay is, it's going to sound ambiguous, but it's true. Be yourself. We want to know about you. Tell your story, whether it's humorous, serious, a trip you took, a person you met. These are all fair game. There is no golden ticket essay that gets you into college, I promise you, even though there are a lot of books out there that say there is. The best ones that we see are your true story, right? And also, don't think that you had to do something monumental or have some very unique experience in your life. Most of us are just normal human beings going through the day to day. And that's okay, you know, but make sure it is your voice. Not saying don't get help on it, but I've seen essays that do get overpolished. You can tell it's no longer the student's voice. It's been kind of relooked. Gets a little tricky there too, right? So I would say, you know, that, and when we say essay, I'm using a lot of terminology here. You have the personal statement, and then in most cases, you also have your supplemental or optional essays as well. Mm-hmm. Common question is the optional essay really optional? Technically, but boy, oh boy, we just talked about demonstrated interest. And if you have a chance to demonstrate more interest in answering an optional essay and you don't do it, it's not a great look. So I would say if you do that personal statement, great. Optional essay, which is technically, but also you should be doing that essay, very good too. And I'd say the last piece of advice is, you know, don't try to write to us. And when I say us, the admissions committee, because you got a bunch of different people with a bunch of different identities, different lenses, different ages, different demographics, reading your essay. If you try to get inside my head, one, I wish you luck. Two, you're not going to show me anything different. I've been doing this a long time. And three, it's going to get away from what story you want to tell me. So I think for you, when you're writing that essay, the most important thing is be yourself. And when you walk away from it, be confident in the fact that whatever the decision is, you've told your story.
That's awesome, Chris. Thank you so much for that insight. And of course, the overall number of applications schools are receiving are on the rise and continue to be so. With an increase in applications, Chris, how do you determine how many students to accept or frankly even deny when you don't necessarily know how many of these applicants will actually attend once accepted?
Yeah, sure thing. I think that's the crux of my job the last few months as we were reading applications and, you know, try to get inside. I just talked about getting inside my head. Now I try to get inside the head of all the high school students, right? And try to figure out what they're looking at. So I'm going to use some terminology here, but I'll go with it. So again, at most highly selected places, applications have soared the last few years. I was doing some research prior to this podcast. And last year, the Common Application said over 7 million students submitted an application to college in 2023. Wow. And again, 4,000 schools, 7 million applications. Okay, so I'm not saying apply to as many schools as you wish. The number used to be 13, 15. I'm hearing some students saying 20, 25 now. Oh, that's your prerogative. I know. So it seems like a lot to me too. But again, it's better than only doing one. So meet somewhere in the middle. The point being is, understand that this is kind of a self-reciprocating cycle, right? What happens is every school wants more applications, so our admit rates will go down. So schools become harder to get into. So students apply to more schools. And next thing you know, we're going round and round, right? So I think for us, there's no question that it's a harder job to both try to figure out which students will attend, but also harder for students to figure out who's going to admit them. So I don't envy either side of this position. But for us, what we do essentially is we try to do something called predictive modeling. And what that essentially means is we have certain metrics that tell us what makes a student more likely to enroll. And again, this is a broad brushstroke, but I'll go there. For example, a campus visit. You know, we talked about demonstrated interest before. All the research shows that students who set foot on a college campus are more likely to attend that institution than not, right? Or the student who never checks in or never has any contact. Again, that's why that demonstrated interest, even if it's just an email, is something. So what we try to do is we try to figure out how many admissions offers to extend. That's the admit rate. And then how many students will take us up on that. That's called the yield rate, right? And basically, how many offers did we make? How many students attended? That equals your yield rate overall. So it's a educated guess, but at the same time, it is a bit of guesswork. You know, a lot of institutions, including UVM, cannot over-enroll their class. We can't under-enroll, but we can't over-enroll. Because if you have too many students on your campus, all of a sudden the residence halls get more crowded, the dining halls get more crowded, classes get bigger, all things that we don't want. So it's trying to find a nice balance between how many students can we have to make sure we meet our class without having too many students on our campus to dilute the experience.
Well, I appreciate that overview. And just a couple of follow-up questions. What is the average size of your incoming freshman class? And for example, in this last cycle, do you remember how many actual applications you received?
We did, definitely. Yeah, I'd say the last 3 years have been pretty steady, anywhere between roughly 28, 29, 30,000 applications, depending on the last 3 years. This year, we're sitting at about 28.5 for applicants to the first year class. And the last 3 years, and again, UVM's in that situation where we have to be very careful not to bring in too many students. The last 3 years running, our selectivity has gotten higher. When I started here in 2019, we were admitting about 72%. We're down around 60% right now, only because our incoming class of 2950 or so has held steady, if not been a touch high the last 3 years we've been here. So I'd say if you're looking for an exact number, about 3,000 students each year to University of Vermont for undergraduate study.
Well, that's terrific. So again, an incoming class of about 3,000 students and you're receiving somewhere around 28 to 30,000 applications. I asked this question because a lot of times students, they're denied. And of course it becomes, oh, was it the B plus in 10th grade? Was it my essay? What was it? Maybe not enough activities. And so I asked that question because again, I just want to repeat it. For a class of 3,000 students, you're getting 28 to 30,000 applications. And I bet that, you know, that first, let's call it 30% that get denied, I bet you their overall profile is probably not that different than the students that were actually accepted. But, you know, one of the biggest institutional priorities is filling your freshman class at a certain number, right? So if you're looking to fill a class of 3,000, you're not going to accept 20,000, right? And by the way, what is your yield, more or less?
No, I'd say our yield the last couple of years it has increased. And again, that's where that guessing game comes in of, okay, historically sure. we've been in a certain number, now we're getting more. I'd say our yield's probably somewhere in the low 20%, which mm-hmm. for a medium-sized public research institution is pretty on par with our competitive set, but it mm-hmm. is increasing the last few years. So again, that's why our selectivity has also increased, because we admit less students, yet still more are showing up. So at the same time, for us, yeah, we are getting more selective. And to your point, John, you know, frankly, at every school I've been at, I've been fortunate in my career that most students who apply can do the work. It's not just mm-hmm. an academic piece, right? And that's right. why that SAT, GPA, you're in, you're out, doesn't work that way. Hmm. It's all the intangibles, right? And I tell students, worry about the things you can control. What you can control is your grades, your SATs, which we may talk about, your activities, for sure. Not just what you're into, but the depth and the breadth of it, right? Do you play sports? Do you do the arts? Do you work outside of school? All these things matter. We want to see students who balance their time. You know, I'm very clear in saying you might not have perfect grades, but if I see a student who can manage a schedule outside of school and excel in that, that's what we need on our campus, because UVM has over 275 clubs and organizations. Hmm. We want students to come here and do well academically, but also get involved in all those clubs and organizations, right? So think about that as an applicant. You can't be one-dimensional, not just academic and not just the social activities either. We saw some students who spend too much time out of the classroom, and that's not good either, right? So, and that's where that recommendation comes into play too, the council rec also. So all these things have to go in the soup. You can control those. What you can't control every year is, you know, maybe a school builds a new engineering facility. Next thing you know, they want a lot of engineers, or it's a new athletic team. They want more of that team, right? The following year, they may have too many. So all of a sudden it gets more competitive to get in. So students, right. you can do the research, you can dig into the websites, that's all good. But again, worry about what you can control and some of the factors outside of your control. That's stuff you can't worry about. You can't worry about where you're from. You can't worry about if your parents attend that institution called Legacy, all these pieces that are, again, beyond your reach.
Well, I really appreciate that insight, and I'm going to repeat it again. Students, control what you can control and don't worry about the rest, because as Chris mentioned, there are institutional priorities. As he said, you know, maybe one year they wanted more engineering majors, they accepted too many. The following year, now they want less. It becomes more competitive. But what you do control is putting your best foot forward throughout high school. As he mentioned earlier, build those ramps. Take the most rigorous courses that you can for yourself, and it's going to differ for each student. But in addition to that transcript, which is extremely important, as we said earlier, because that's what admissions representatives are looking at to determine whether or not you could handle the rigor once on their campus. But the other piece is your activity sheet. What did you do with your time outside of the classroom? And as Chris indicated, if you have to do something with the family, if you have to balance a schedule because you're working after school, or if you're involved in 3-4 clubs in your school community, these are things that admissions representatives like Chris are going to want to know, because it's going to help them determine the type of classmate you're going to be, the type of roommate you're going to be, and how you're going to contribute to the overall community that we call the University of Vermont. Would you agree with that, Chris?
100%, John. I love the fact you mentioned community, because again, that's an instrumental thing to come to a campus and find. All the research and background shows that students who attend institutions throughout the country and throughout the world, they may be top flight academics, but if they wake up, go to class and do nothing else for 4 years, they're not going to last. They're not going to have a good experience. So when you get to that campus that first year, find your people, whether it's through sports, whether it's through the arts, through volunteer work, whatever it may be, through your identities you carry. All good, but don't spend your whole 4 years in your dorm room. You're missing a huge opportunity, and your experience will be that much more rewarding for it.
Couldn't agree more. And Chris, you obviously review applications from, I would say, thousands of high schools, right? Especially with all the years that you've been in admissions, which of course have various ways of calculating student GPAs, for example. So when reviewing the high school transcript, do you use the GPA as indicated on it, or do you recalculate it based on your own metrics? And what else are you looking for when reviewing a high school student's transcript?
Yeah, sure thing. And John, you're absolutely right. We get applications from all over the world, right? All different metrics, all different types of transcript, everything from narrative to numerical to letter grace to self-evaluation. Some students grade themselves, which is a wild experience for sure. But point being is, we do. And for us at UVM, we do recalculate grades just to put everybody in a somewhat equal playing field. Now, when I say that, that doesn't mean we don't account for all the strength of your curriculum, right? Many of you are taking AP, IB, dual enrollment. As we mentioned before, you want to make sure you challenge yourself. So for us, but we do need to get some type of standard, because a lot of schools have different GPAs, even on a numerical scale. Some have a 4.0, some have 5.0, some have a 13.7 2.0, which isn't a made-up example. This is very true. So for us, we absolutely do recalculate, but we also take into account, especially in those five core, again, English, math, science, social science, foreign language, those courses carry more weight in the process. And not to discount the electives, we look at those too, but especially that core curriculum with a course of 4 years, where we calculate that and make a decision based on that.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you talked about recalculating, and you're recalculating based on the core subjects, which of course are English, math, science, social science, and world language. And it's also, as you indicated, to level the playing field, because you're right. There are schools that have a 4-point scale, 5-point scale, 8-point scale. I didn't hear about this one, but you said a 13.7 scale, which is quite unique. And some that don't have a scale at all, if you could imagine. So, you know, I could understand why you would recalculate again to just level that playing field. Now, Chris, when reviewing applications from all of these different high schools, how do you take into account when one of them offers all of the AP or IB offerings that you could imagine, while others, if lucky, only offer a fraction, or perhaps they have limitations on how many of these courses their students can take? How does the application review process differ for students from these very different high schools?
Yeah, sure thing. I think for us, it's important to note that you can only play the field that you're given, right? Mm-hmm. What's the context of the high school that you're in? And what have you done to take advantage of that? I think that's the critical piece here, because some students, and again, working with students from all over the world, some students go to high schools that have all the opportunities afforded to them. They have first class curriculum, different activities, clubs, sports, arts, everything there, college resources as well, all the things they can do to make you a successful student. But if you coast and don't take advantage of those things, you're not going to get into a college based on a high school name alone. I think it's really important. Flip side is some students go to high schools that are incredibly underfunded. They have hundreds of students in there. They don't have specific courses. They don't have clubs. They don't have organizations. But am I going to disadvantage the student, the top one in that class, because they did the best they could in the hand they were dealt? Absolutely not. So I think it's important that, yes, where you are can make a difference, but you got to take advantage of where you are, because if you don't, it can actually work against you, because you have to think about, for most competitive schools, you're not the only applicant from that high school to that specific university. And we're going to see what your other classmates are doing in that high school. And to dispel the notion, we don't have ratios. I can admit as many students from one high school as I wish. Technically, if all of them did all the right things, I could admit every student. That does not happen, only because the more students that apply, we get a good cross-section, and we see what the students who took advantage of everything did, and we see what the students who did not take advantage of everything did. And we kind of get that bar to set that way. So I think, to your point, John, it's that you could be in a great place, but you have to take advantage of all the things that make that place great. And if you're not, to my students who, again, may not be in that situation, don't think that you don't have a shot here. You absolutely do. You can only, again, play the hand that you're dealt. So if you're at a place that may not have those resources, do the best you can with what you got. Colleges recognize that. It shows grit, it shows determination, and it shows the fact that even though you might have had the cards stacked against you, at the same time, you could still get it done. That means a lot to a college campus.
Well, I appreciate you talked about the fact that if you have, for example, 20 students that apply from any high school throughout the country or beyond, there's no cap in terms of how many of those students you may accept. However, with more students applying, you do get to see which one you do get to see which of those students actually took advantage of everything that was available to them. And I want to repeat that you review based on the context of the high school that the student is in, and you ask, what did you take advantage of? In other words, what was there and whether or not you took advantage. So students, again, play that piece back a few times. I think that's an important one. And so I know that the University of Vermont, like so many other schools, is test optional. Chris, you mentioned that earlier. Can you share the percentage of students that were actually admitted and did not submit their test scores?
Sure thing. I knew I wasn't going to get through this podcast without talking about testing. I was hoping as much, but we'll try.
I'm sorry, Chris. So,
that's what we're here for sure. And I know it's a hot button topic. So yes, test optional. And again, as we sit here and they coming out of COVID, I want to say, well, fully out of at the same time as we sit in that space now, a lot of schools have gone test optional. Okay. The question you want to ask is, how many of your students did you admit test optional, right? Because every school can say they're test optional. They get more applications. These things are tied together for sure. But if an institution is only admitting 20% of their students without testing, how test optional are they really? At University of Vermont, we're about 50-50, maybe 60-40 non-senders to senders. So we don't have a huge gulf in between the students that are sending testing and the ones that are not. So that's our application pool and our admit rate as well. So what that basically means is at UVM, if you submit your testing, we'll consider it. If you don't, we're just going to look at everything else I mentioned, transcripts, recommendations, essay, counselor recommendations, that much more. So again, it's just a bigger percentage of that pie, if you will, if you don't submit testing. The thing is, the common question I get every day, multiple times a day is, should I submit my testing or not? And I think the thing is, you're going to have to do some work there and do some self-exploration, because go on the school's website and go on that school's website only, because third-party sites may not be current. They might not be updated. They might not have the most specific information. So you want to look at that institution site and see what their testing averages were. Where does your testing fall? Is it competitive? Is it above? Is it below? See if it'll add to your academic candidacy for that institution. If it's going to help you, think about submitting it. If it's not, it's not going to help you flat out. So you really want to consider, and I've had some students whose applications, and it breaks my heart, they apply, everything else is great, but then they submit a test score that's well below our average. That is going to hurt your application, actually. So you got to do a little bit of homework there. And just a little bit, because no admissions counselor is going to tell you what to do. Because if you do listen to me and the decision does not go your way, the first phone call I get is saying, Chris, you told me to do this. So it takes a little bit of self-advocacy there to take a look. But at the same time, we'll help you with that process. But ultimately, it's going to be your choice.
Well, absolutely. It's always the student and their parents' choice. But I appreciate you talking about the fact that it's 50-50 in terms of the percentage of students that submit test optional, but also the percentage of students that are actually accepted that did not submit their test scores. So a quick follow-up on that, Chris. I know that your test optional. However, you have some amazing engineering programs, for example, which are a little more competitive than the norm, right? So what about students that are applying for one of your engineering programs? Is it still test optional for those students? Because there are colleges and universities, as you know, that are test optional, except for some of their more competitive majors.
No, 100%. John, that's a great point. Because again, that's where you have to check with your individual schools and see what their policies are. You know, at UVM, we are test optional across the board. So even whether it's our most competitive programs like engineering, environmental sciences, nursing, anything medical at UVM, because we have a hospital right on campus, is going to be that much more level of selectivity. Other schools may not be. I think the biggest differentiator for us in our majors and our programs is going to be the courses that you're taking. Going back to that transcript, like my engineers, if you don't have pre-calc at a minimum, preferably calculus, chemistry, and physics, that's more of a non-starter than the SATs, to be quite honest. If you do submit testing, however, though, we're going to look at that math score for sure to see how it indicates your ability to handle the courses that are coming into that first year. And that goes for a variety of majors. You know, look at your academic strengths and see how that relates to your possible major. We just talked about engineering. Business is the same way. If math is not your strongest subject or you struggle in math, you're going to want to think about being an accounting major and what that's going to look like as an accounting applicant to your schools. And I can't tell you how many students tell me, I want to be a doctor, but biology is their weakest subject, right? That's going to be a challenge. So again, that comes with some self-exploration, sometimes some hard self-conversation of like, okay, I want this, but this is my skill set. Look into that. But for us, the transcript is king for sure. But again, the level of specificity around courses you take in high school as it relates to your college major is something that'll count for us probably more than the testing in terms of specificity of major.
Well, I appreciate that. Number one, you talked about the fact that the University of Vermont is in fact test optional regardless of which major you intend to pursue, students. But I also appreciate how you, again, emphasize that transcript. And for example, if you're looking to major in engineering, obviously at a minimum, having that pre-calculus, chemistry, and physics is very important in the overall review process. And, you know, one could understand why, because you want to make sure if you're going to admit them into an engineering program that they have a solid foundation coming out of high school so that, of course, they continue to be successful once they're on your campus. So, Chris, where do you see this test optional nature of the admissions process going over the next few years?
This is the part, John. If I had a crystal ball on my desk, I'd be a much higher paid employee somewhere.
Yeah, you and me both.
I tell you, exactly. Between that and the FAFSA, we got a few things we can talk about. Being said, you know, with standardized testing, that's hard because I understand, and there are some high powered institutions going back. And I think that's probably where I start is, you know, I've been in institutions where testing is required, where it's test optional, somewhere it's test flexible. There's a few ways to meet the requirement through AP courses, IB courses, other things, right? I work with students from around the world and across the country, all sorts of different socioeconomic backgrounds. And again, as I mentioned, I was a first generation college student from Queens, New York. Do I see challenges with a 3-hour exam dictating and having outsized importance of where a student gets into college? I do. You know, I've seen some pretty amazing students who I've had to say no to, and then a test optional school I could say yes to when they apply and do not only just fine, but great in my institution. And John, you touched on before about persistence and retention. You know, it's not just about getting into that institution, it's about graduating from that school. So many folks get so fixated on admit rates and yield, but then they stop the narrative once a student gets in. You got to think about how many students come back for sophomore year, how many students are maintaining a strong GPA, how many students graduate from that school, right? And I think that's the piece where I'm not saying standardized testing isn't part of that component, but I think we have to look at some of the schools and who's writing the narrative essentially, right? Like right now, as I mentioned, there's 4,000 different schools in the United States. We've heard a lot about three of them that are going back to standardized testing. I won't name names, but there are some schools that are very specifically some very high-powered, incredible institutions, highly selected, that are going back to testing. And that's their choice, but that's all we hear about, right? So when a place like UPenn says, you know, we're keeping test optional, you don't hear about that as much. And there are some schools that have been test optional for years, Bowdoin, Bates, the UC system, that have seen incredible outcomes, incredible students, and are among the most selective institutions in the country and have done just fine. So my advice to students is, you know, it's your journey, it's your path, but I would not equate the quality of an academic institution based on whether or not they're test optional. And the numbers, the background, the history shows that, the outcomes show that. So don't discount those schools in your college search. Many students will only look at 100, if not 50 colleges in the country, even though there's only 4,000 of them out there. Take that into account, look at the averages, talk to the alumni, talk to the students that are there. But a long way of saying is, again, I get testing and why schools would do it, but don't discount the ones that are test optional as less selective or not as able. You got some amazing places out there that have been test optional for a long time and have a variety of alumni to show for it.
Well, Chris, those are tremendous pieces of advice. This has been a phenomenal conversation. Unfortunately, it does lead us to that last question. And even though you left us with so many things to reflect on, great pieces of advice, what is your last piece of advice that you would provide students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Yeah, sure thing. John, it's been a pleasure. This is the heart of my work. It's one of the things that keeps me going after doing this so long. You know, it's working with students, it's the counseling. I love UVM, it's a great place, but the sales part of it isn't what I like. It's more about the personal side of things, like counseling students. Because I'm lucky. I'm at a place where, you know, if a student comes to UVM, it's the right fit. Awesome. We'd love to see you. But if you go somewhere else that's the right fit and you're going to do great there, that's great too. We want to see you graduate and go somewhere you're going to be happy and persist and thrive and do all the things we talked about. So I think it's just that, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint, right? And I think no matter where you're listening to this during your application process, whether it's 9th graders, 10th graders, 11th graders, seniors, understand that the work you put into this is what you're going to get out of it. Now, I want to clarify, this doesn't mean this process is going to be fair. Far from it. You've got some schools that are single-digit admit rates and are dropping every year, right? You may do all the things, have all the grades, all the testing, and it's still not going to get in. That is not on you, okay? This is a two-way street. We're looking to admit students and we're looking for the right fit, and you should be looking for the right fit as well, right? You're gonna have options. If you do the work and some of the things we talked about today in and out of the classroom and the research and the financial aid, you will have options for sure. Again, scale your options though. If you're applying to all the schools that are, again, single-digit admit rates, you might have less options than a lot of folks. You wanna scale your expectations there for sure. Keep an open mind, right? But I think for us is, again, I think you have to do what you can, keep an open mind, and the work you put into this is what you get out of it, because at some point you're going to wind up at a place. It may not be the place you thought of, but if you engage, you find community, you're going to have an amazing experience. So be confident heading into that and know that there's going to be a place for you.
Chris, this has been an awesome conversation. Your many years in admissions really shines through. You were awesome. I can't thank you enough, and I'm so happy, as I know that this is going to help so many students and their parents as they navigate the college admissions process. I do hope to have you again, Chris. Thank you so much.
John, it's a pleasure. I wish you all the best of luck in your search. Don't ever hesitate to reach out with questions. And again, best of luck in your future search.
Thank you again, Chris. And to everyone out there, good luck with your college search. Take care, everyone, and best wishes. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.